Be good.
Hello, friends, and hello, strangers. Thanks for tuning into the Monkey Tooth Podcast. This is your pal, Andrew. And with my wife, Tiffany, and our little dog, Pele, we're doing this podcast every week on our way from California to Alaska down to Argentina. We're currently in the lower 48 states and having a dadgum blast. I'm pretty sure Pele's having the most fun of the three of us, but that's just because he's a dog and that's what they do. Tiffany and I are having a great time, largely because of the people we continue to meet. We've been just swimming in a sea of kindness and generosity as we've moved through the U.S. and Canada. And the people that you're about to hear from in this episode were particularly kind to us. Steve and Michelle Osman. Now, Steve is Michelle's father. They are super, super kind, super cool people. They're both artists. They do very different styles of work, but both of them are amazing. We got to see both of their art, and I highly, highly encourage you to visit our website, mtp.dog, where we'll put up some pictures and links, more importantly, to their websites, which are steveosmanfineart.com for Steve's work and michelleosman.com for Michelle's work. It's unfair of me to even attempt to describe how cool their art is. You just got to go see it for yourself. Steve also wrote a book called Stumbling into Paradise, which is available on Amazon, and it recounts sort of the hilarious and, romantic notion-stripping account of his and his family's journey to Costa Rica, where they started a business, an adventure business down in Manuel Antonio, Costa Rica. It's a great read. I'm really enjoying it. I just started it this week, and it's one of those you just want to get back to and finish. Anyhow, we talked about art, we talked about family, and we talked about one of Steve's passions. It's called Art for the Environment, where he'll be selling his art and giving away the proceeds to various environmental nonprofits, which I think is a super cool idea. And if you're an artist who has work out there that you just can't seem to do anything with, it's sitting around in your basement, you got to get in touch with Steve. He's got some pretty hip ideas. Okay. You're also going to hear from Michelle's little boy, who was there in the room. He's or around the house. I think he's maybe 8 months old, 8 or 15 months old. I can't remember. I think we say so in the podcast. Anyway, he's a young man and he's got a lot to say, but it's pretty cute. He was a real sweetheart. Steve's wife and Michelle's mother, Mary Lou, was also there, but she understandably declined to be on the podcast because she doesn't want to just talk about herself. And I get it. Totally get it. She was also wonderful. Just know that she was fantastic and did a great job babysitting. All right. I'm going to stop with all that. I want to thank our patrons. I want to thank the people who write reviews for us on iTunes and Stitcher, and encourage you, if you'd like to go check those things out. Patreon.com. Where you can support us for as little as 25 cents a week or a dollar a month, however you want to look at it, 12 bucks a year. It's pretty cheap and it helps us get down the road. You can also read our journal, mtp.dog/journal, where we write about all the stuff we've been up to. And Instagram and Facebook at Monkey Tooth Podcast, you can see pictures. We put those up, fairly regularly. That's Tiff's job and she does a good job of it. That's all I want to say. I want to get right into this episode. I hope you enjoy it. We certainly had a great time doing it. Have fun. Do interesting things. TTFN.
I'm Steve Osman.
Michelle Osman.
Thank you so much for having us in your house. We are in Bozeman, Montana, which is not where either of you grew up. And we're up. Should probably make clear that I'm talking to a father and daughter. This is our first father-daughter podcast. And you come from Detroit or no?
No, my wife comes from, Mary Lou comes from Detroit. Okay. Yes, I'm a West Coast kid. So I was born in Seattle, moved to Bellingham, spent summers in Alaska because my dad was in the fishing business, and then California later, and you know, into high school and college.
Yeah. And you were raised in the jungle.
Yep.
Right. Tell me where you came from.
Well, born in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and then off to Costa Rica, to Manuel Antonio, to, yeah, play at the beach.
Yeah. So from one jungle to another.
Yeah.
Well, she was 8 and her sister was 6 when we moved to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And we spent time in Jackson, obviously, where they were born, and then Seattle as well, but we were antsy. I was antsy. I wanted to go have an adventure.
Yeah. And having 2 kids, 2 girls, did not slow you down.
We just drug them right along. We called it abuse tours.
What did you guys call it then? And what, more importantly, do you call it now?
Oh, it's still abuse tours.
It's still abuse tours.
Yeah, it's inherited.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Are you looking forward to inflicting that same sort of thing upon your children?
Yep. Yeah. Great. My husband grew up with the same sort of family, you know, getting drug all around. He went back to Yugoslavia during the war, so he's used to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's abuse tour possibly earned.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing was called get loose or get lost. That went with the abuse tour. So you had to be able to get loose and get lost, actually.
Wow. What was the documentary that we watched? Oh, my gosh, the incredible primatologist, Jane.
Yeah, Fun. Goodall.
Jane, did you see the Jane Goodall documentary that just came out?
Mm-hmm.
So her son... And, like, I guess, you know, she was a primatologist and her husband was a National Geographic videographer or documentarian. And their kid went everywhere and was having to deal with apes and, things in the savannah and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, let me hear your sad tale of of a jungle lifestyle. One of the things that struck me in our conversation earlier with your mom, who has declined to be on the podcast, so there's anybody out there listening, I don't want you to think we've shunned her or not allowed
her. She's babysitting right now.
Yeah. But she said you referred to your school as monkey school. Is that true?
I just thought of it as homeschool. Because there was school, which was, you know, the public grade school and then public high school, and then there was mom's home school, which was all the time, unless we were doing art.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we learned really quickly that if we were sewing or practicing guitar poorly or painting, we could get out of maybe an essay or math to a limited degree.
Still.
The other thing they learned is if they were really quiet,
that's true.
When their parents had friends over, they could learn a whole lot.
Yeah, they could suddenly be really dialed in.
Yeah, frogs on the wall.
Nice.
Kind of thing. Yeah,
that's a great.
They learned a lot there.
That's a great education.
Yeah, yeah. Don't interject too many questions as a kid. Like, oh, I want to be a part of this. Just sit there quietly and just all ears.
Yeah.
The grown-ups have had a bit of wine, a bit of rum. They don't notice you're there. Yeah.
2 days later, Mom, what is exactly a son of a bitch? Can you explain that to me?
That's great.
And we didn't have a lot of friends here, but we had some real interesting friends.
I can imagine.
Yeah, very interesting friends.
Yeah.
So.
The wanted and unwanted.
The wanted and unwanted. Yes, that was a theme in many of the bars there. It would say the wanted and the unwanted are welcome here. You know,
that's wonderful.
And there was a lot of those kind of people.
And what years were you guys there in Manuel Antonio?
How did we go? 1979, and we left. 1989, excuse me. Yes. It's a senior moment. 89 to 2000, so 11 years.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a good.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to get there right when broke ex-hipsters or old hipsters could actually start a business without any money. We had $500 when we moved down there. And that was very fortunate.
Well, tell me about that business. What was your business?
We started off, I had an old Range Rover, one of the long body Range Rovers right out of The Gods Must Be Crazy because it was constantly breaking down. It was a nightmare car. And then I met the guy, Rafael Gallo, who owned Real Tropicales, which was the largest and just about the only one of 2 rafting companies down there. And during a river kayaking trip, I told him I was, not going to get the job I wanted, that I'd come there for, to build an eco resort. And I was really disappointed. He's like, well, we really want to have an outpost for sea kayaking. So I've got some extra boats if you want to borrow them, which I did. And then I told him after a few months, you know, there's some great little rivers here. And that was their primary thing, was river rafting. So then he gave me a funky old raft called Pitufo, which is the Spanish name for Smurf. It was covered in patches and some life jackets and paddles. And we started that up. And that became our primary, you know, it wasn't year round because during the dry season, which was when all the people were there, there was not enough water in the rivers. And we eventually went to two-man inflatables and, you know, the divorce boat, I called it. But, yeah, and then, you know, the business just kept growing, and so did the competition. You know, we started, it was horseback riding on the beach or, you know, go with Iguana Tours, my business. And by the time we left 11 years later, there was probably 65, 70 businesses. You could parasail, you could rent ATVs. Right. Yeah, it just turned into a bar. Zip line. Yeah. People falling out of the sky.
Did you sell that or just close it down and move on?
I sold it. Yeah.
Sold the business?
Yeah, I sold, actually sold it to some Costa Ricans.
That's cool.
Yeah, they needed, I was a legitimate business, and so many Costa Rican businesses just worked under the table. Mm-hmm. And I had all these connections with travel agents, you know, throughout, you know, the United States and even Europe, and cruise ships. And so the people that bought my business really needed that cruise ship business.
Yeah.
But the cruise ship, I mean, those people, you know, whether it was cruise ships or big agencies, they wanted a licensed, insured, you know, they wanted the guides all to have first aid. So they kind of got all that when they bought my business.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Now, were you old enough at any point ever to have worked there?
I worked my last year there because high school went to 11th grade. And so I graduated and then we had a full year before we moved back to the States. And so I worked... hey, Hayden. I worked for Iguana Tours. Uh-huh. That was my first job, and I was a park guide.
Oh, cool.
And so I would, you know, take people off and wander around and tell them about the wildlife and the botany, and they only wanted to hear about my life.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, what are you doing
here? Yeah, so I would end up talking politics and giving them a history of, like the... culture and what it was like to grow up there, and I enjoyed it, but I was 18 and I made enough money to buy a surfboard and quit.
What's your father's chagrin?
Yeah. I'd broken my surfboard right before I started working. I made $300, which was all I needed, and
that'll be all, thanks. Surfing's free from here on out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. So you've not had an interest in being a river guide or touring?
I haven't. My sister's was a river guide, and I prefer to give rides to guides because they're usually broke and often have DUIs, and I've given them lots of rides.
Yeah. I had to prove that I could make it alone now, but that's not me. I wanted to show how independent I'd grown now, but that's not me. I could try to be big in the eyes of the world. What matters to me is what I could be to just one girl. I'm a little bit scared 'cause I haven't been home in a long time. You need my love, and I know that I left at the wrong time. My folks, when I wrote and told them what I was up to, said that's not me. I went through all kinds of changes, took a look at myself, and said that's
well, in spite of the fact that you've both split from river guiding and rafting, you share a very common passion and work in painting. We've had the privilege of seeing both of your paintings, and we will put up links to anything you want to link because I'm fascinated and enamored with both of your art. And they're very different. I mean, it's not that it's you're doing the same things by any means, but you're both painting. You're both creating like these little worlds and textures on canvas and on different medium. It's just, it's incredible. Where So you've been doing this, Steve, for quite some time, painting?
Since I was a little kid, I loved to draw. You know, I went through the draw horses, you know, draw battleships, draw, you know, basically always loved it. But I didn't study art in college because I was too practical then. Mm-hmm. It was before I became a hippie. And so I got a degree in environmental biology.
Oh, wow.
And, but I always continued to
And that was before you became a hippie.
Boy, that was, well, no, really, you know, I went to the University of California at Santa Barbara, and right when I moved into Santa Barbara and I'd done my first year in Colorado, that was when the hippie revolution was taking off, and I was like, you can have this much fun? Nobody told me. So, yeah, I kind of, I mean, I got my degree, but I realized that I wanted a lifestyle more than I wanted a profession, which is kind of what I've pursued up till now.
Yeah. And it sounds like you've kind of helped people achieve a lifestyle in a lot of ways.
I was lucky to be in the right place at the right time, you know, whether it was in Jackson Hole, you know, where I went there to ski to figure out whether I was going to go back and get a graduate degree. And I met my wife and we just had a wonderful time. And, you know, we worked basic tourist jobs. You know, I was a river guide in the summer, and we waited tables or bartended or did whatever it took.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was some stress there and trauma. Sure. You know, you start getting into your late 30s and you're like, what am I doing with my life? I got two kids, and so those were things that we had to deal with.
Yeah.
But we were fortunate. Costa Rica was the same way. We moved there right as tourism was taking off, so we could do it on a shoestring. Mm. Got out of there like Jackson right as it was getting discovered by people with money. Mm. And tourists were coming, were just flocking in, and we were thinking, oh man, this isn't our town anymore. And now we're in Bozeman, and I apologize to everyone that lives here because
it's happening all over again.
It's happening here.
I was about to say, everywhere you've lived, Jackson, Manuel Antonio here.
They're coming. The hordes are following.
They're going to be like shitty towns in the Midwest. They're going to pay you to move there to like make it cool.
Right, exactly.
Please make Des Moines great again by moving here.
Yeah. Well, my church is the Church of the Zeros. And the only philosophy is give nothing, get nothing. So I'd always wish that I had actually not been a not-for-profit church. If I had actually, you know, pursued marrying people and the ministry, I probably could have made a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of money in believing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how about you? It sounds like you kind of gravitated towards art at first as an escape from school.
No, it was just always there.
Yeah.
Because my dad made art, mm-hmm. we got access to all of his supplies, which were, you know, far greater than just crayons. And as long as we were good with them and put them back, we could do whatever we wanted with them. And, you know, between both parents, they just made it very, very accessible and very much a part of
But it really was Mary Lou more than me that actually got them into like drawing on the right side of the brain, you know, that she taught them a lot more than I did. I said, here's all this stuff. One of the things I think that was most important that I did with the girls, like Sunday would just be, I would make pancakes and put on loud music or maybe even Beethoven or something, and then we would get a shared canvas and we would just all go at it.
Wow.
And the only rule was that you had to ask somebody if you're going to like cross over, you know, go on top of what they had done. And it was with acrylic, so it was fast and dried fast. And and actually some of those pieces we ended up hanging in our house.
Do you still have any of those?
You know, they're still down there. When I sold my house, I sold a lot of the art with it, but I kept all that stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, because it was just so cool. Yeah. And some of them look like these, you know, psychedelic underwater scenes, or they were really some flipped out things.
Or Kandinsky. Like, they look like modern art with all these strange floating objects. Uh-huh. And
with four different styles.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, that loosened everybody up, put the music on, and that was really fun. Sometimes we would go up on the river. Remember, we'd like get a canvas wet, spread it on a rock, bring out all the acrylic paints, and just go at it.
That sounds like a new business.
with all these great
what town can you ruin with that business? I would like to go do that right now. Mm-hmm. Just sit out on a beach.
It sounds like art therapy, doesn't it? Like all these people are selling, you know, yoga and stand-up paddle boards. Well, right after that, you know, you can go and paint.
If you're still triggered, come on down to the beach and paint on a rock. We'll take the canvas right off of it.
Yeah. Art's supposed to be the new midlife crisis. Like, instead of getting your hog.
I thought it was podcasts. thank God.
Well, like all the adult coloring books. I heard that's going out of fashion, but... I mean, yeah, people get, you know, zenned into filling in, you know, paint by numbers. Or
I still, if I go to a restaurant that has crayons available, I love to get the crayons and just draw stupid things on the back of the kids' menu. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I should request that more often. I kind of wait till there's an actual child around. They're like, can we get two packs of crayons? And then I pretend like I'm
playing.
You
could bring your own.
Yeah. No, I could not. But that's a whole different story. But yeah, I got to quit pretending that I'm just drawing with another kid and just ask for the crayon. Yeah. So you're painting with your dad's stuff, kind of getting some tutelage from your mom, who just, I can say two things. Your pancakes are delicious. We had them this morning. Thank you. And your mother definitely has the countenance of a good teacher. You know, there's some people you meet you just know can instruct and explain things in a way that you're going to get. And what was interesting, she complimented you on having that same quality, which I thought was really sweet. But we noticed it in her right away. So can you talk a little bit about your mom's influence on what you're...
Oh, yeah. She's an amazing teacher. And she would pose for us so that we could do gesture drawings of a figure. Wow. She'd, you know, go put on her bathing suit, which we're used to, and and pose for us and let us do contour drawings. And then she had some great books, drawing, I think it's Drawing with Children and then Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, that are incredible. And I've used them teaching up at MSU, and she's been an amazing resource for that. But yeah, she's a natural born teacher. Like, being able to do something is totally different from explaining it, and also nurturing a willingness to... I never felt, especially now that I teach, like I never experienced the self-doubt people get in doing art. Oh, and it was, I think, a lot to do with like the environment that she created. It was really comfortable. It was super nurturing, and the expectation was to, you know, do your best, do whatever you want, and follow every little kind of journey that you start to take or are curious about. And that's something I'm trying to still hold on to, because in this day and age you start to get a little bit, you know, cynical, or you question yourself, and then you go to school for art and the world comes crashing in. And so to come back and find that little self journey that you were on as, you know, a kid, where you're just following that pencil.
Yeah. Well, it's cool that you've got one parent explicitly telling you to follow your intuitions, and one parent you can see has clearly just followed intuition. That's pretty cool that you got that influence. Mm-hmm. And one thing that the two of you this morning were explaining about you, was that the way that you teach, it's almost like you're helping someone else discover their own idea. It's not like you're telling them, here's how you should accomplish X, but rather it's like you're brushing away something, and underneath that, the relief of that is that person's original idea, which is a really interesting way to teach.
Right, to say, have you thought about, and then let them fill in the blank.
Yeah.
As opposed to going, more green. Yeah, I think all it would work here. Plus, you know, we have this, you go and you look at Art Magazine, Art Forum, all these different things, and you pick them up. And if you come out of, you know, kind of our background and Michelle's background, and you look at what's making big bucks in the art world, and you go, really?
That's it?
You know, it's like politics. I mean, it's just unbelievable what people are, you know, paying a lot of money for and or giving power to. And, you know, so that can make you really cynical. So what you have to do is just kind of go, okay, I don't believe in that. I'm not going to play that game. I'm going to just do what I think is quality work, you know, with my own creativity. And because that can make you really, really cynical.
It can. I can imagine. But if you look back through history, all the greatest things that have ever come out, like great music, great art, great architecture, there was a muse. And that muse is a product of tension, something fighting against you or something preventing you from achieving it. And with a enormous market for sort of fatuous, crappy, paper-thin art against you, you've got a sort of a palette to make great stuff.
Yeah. You
know, you're even more encouraged to do something beautiful and cool, which you both are doing things beautiful and cool. So I want to talk about your specific styles. Now, I don't know how ambitious it is to try to talk about what you're doing instead of showing people, but you do, Steve, a pointillist style very
just,
often.
Just recently, I've kind of switched to, applying a lot more paint very loosely, but I'm still painting realism in that, you know, I started doing lichens because they're beautiful abstracts, great colors, and now I've morphed into sandhill cranes, but I'm still, you know, using that technique.
Can you explain to people what pointillism is and what we can hit
Michelle can help me here. She's got an art history background.
It's dots.
Yeah, and essentially.
It started, the most famous one would be Seurat's Lagrangeat, which is all dots, you know, of people picnicking on the like riverside. And the idea being that it comes out of Impressionism, but it's a little more stylized. Each brushstroke is kind of more rounded and dot-like.
I was telling you, I don't really use a paintbrush much except to go in, unless I want to do something very detailed, contrasted against all the dots. But, you know, I'll use my finger or Q-tip or whatever. Right. And then I realized that if I don't like it, I paint over it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, or I layer it. So you get a wonderful layered effect, which is really nice. And
lovely textures.
It's been exciting. Yeah.
It's hard not to touch them. When you see them, they look like you.
Once they dry, you can touch them.
Yeah, I would encourage that, especially not with me around. I'm a pretty tactile weirdo.
I mean, Michelle paints so much more in a Renaissance. You know, an incredibly detailed. You know, her facility with paint is unbelievable. Whereas I'm just kind of like, you know. And the other thing that I've enjoyed is that I mix all my own colors. I pretty much just use primary colors. And you can mix just about anything, even blacks. Yeah. So that's really an interesting thing. Yeah. And it gives you a unified palette because you're building off of, you know, just the primaries.
Yes.
And that's helped a lot, you know, with my painting.
What would you call your style?
I guess I'd call it hyper-realistic. I was actually trying to look up the difference between photorealistic and hyper-realistic, and the photorealists tend to, you know, like, you could pick up that can, and it's more still-life-oriented, whereas mine start to verge, you know, they're very, very realistic, but they have more emphasis on the narrative than on just reproducing that exact texture and surface quality.
Yours tend to, in my view, in my impression, they have movement. You know, it's realism hyper in that you can see the eventuality of what's happening in that moment. You know, it doesn't look like just a still life. It's a growing thing. I mean, what we've seen mostly are your cloudscapes, and these just beautiful and ominous things that we've all appreciated from afar but are glad are not upon us, you know? And that there is a growing sense of some shit is about to happen in your
well paintings. You feel like with Michelle's paintings, if you blink, that cloud's going to come towards you and keep changing. And her waterscapes are the same way. You know, yeah. She captures water beautifully. And, you know, if you blink, you're going to see that fluctuation of light,
yes.
You know, come at you in a wave or whatever, or yeah. Underwater even. Yeah, so that's a pretty unique thing, I think.
Where did that come from? To do that seems like you've got to have just a shitload of confidence in what you're doing. You know, I've never experienced an abundance of confidence.
She's a confident painter. She knows what she can do.
Yeah. Right? So what? I mean, how do you even begin to make a painting like that? Does it start with a sketch? Or are you looking at a photograph, or what? How do you get there?
I usually look at photographs. I take a ton of photographs, and that's part of where the movement comes in, because as you're photographing, the storm's changing.
Yeah.
And then I get to kind of come back in. And do you know David Hockney's collages?
I don't.
He'd take tons of photographs and collage them together and let them be sort of broken up and almost cubist. And so I'll have like hundreds of photos of a given storm. And then I usually print all of them. I just go to Costco and print them. And then I'll lay them out on the floor and just tape them together. And I end up with these like time sequences,
yeah,
as they happen, and then I start to piece those together. Usually, you know, there's a strong reference happening with one particular cloud or formation, but then I'm also tweaking little things and finding a formation that I prefer in this one and sort of sneaking it in and adding it here, enhancing and taking away, and I really want that sense of movement.
Yeah, well, you nailed it, for sure. Tell me you're saving those things.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got all of them. They're
hilarious. Tell them about your MFA long mural that you did, because I think it's one of the greatest things you ever did. I mean, it was a very ambitious project.
Yeah. It's...
Start with the acronym, MFA, Master of Fine Arts.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not very smart, so I just I need acronyms laid out.
I knew that the space that I was going to show in had a giant back wall, and I wanted to have one long painting. So I bought a roll of canvas and cut it to, it's 29 feet long and about, I believe, 5 or 6 feet high. And it was a battle. Some paintings are easy and some are hard, and grad school is just generally hard, particularly in the arts, because everything that you value and are interested in is being questioned every single day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, the way you pass is by doing an oral defense, and it's truly a defense. And so I wanted this sort of grand statement, and I was trying to actually morph being under a wave and have that turn into a cloud. Because when you dive underwater, our eyes can't see it, but great photographs will, you know, take a picture of it, and it looks the way the storm clouds do. So they have really similar qualities. So I was trying
dive
to...
dive under a wave, you're speaking.
Yeah, under a wave. A breaking wave. Trying to combine those two qualities. And then to kind of talk about the sequence of time, I ended up talking a lot about time in my defense. I took the painting and segmented it. And so it's one whole painting, but then I've painted these divides into it, so it looks like the photographs as they're taped together. Because each photograph will, like, the light will change ever so slightly. Sure. So you can see that faint divide in it. And then on my smaller works, I'd been screen printing. This was way too big to screen print. And so I took, my husband's a contractor, the line, chalk lines.
Yeah.
And we just snapped chalk lines across the whole thing and then sprayed it with fixative.
Oh, wow.
And then I came back over that and I wiped out, because I like the idea of the porousness of the cloud and of the water. And so I'd wipe out little areas of it. So there are certain areas where the chalk's showing through strongly and others where it's not. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. How long did the piece take you?
It's hard to say because I was working on the whole show simultaneously. And I worked on that one. It had a lot of false starts. I ended up cutting 2 feet off the whole bottom of it, or 3 feet even. For a while, I was trying to tape blueprints onto it, and then I peeled all of those off. So, it was a journey unto itself.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But the finished product was amazing. Yeah.
Where is it now?
It's in the spare bedroom, rolled up.
Rolled up, yeah. Waiting for a home.
29 feet of canvas.
Yeah, if you're out there, if you happen to have a 30-foot wall, or maybe two 15-foot walls that can just bend ever so perfectly. Yeah. Man, that sounds like an incredible piece. I mean, just like a...
It'll find a home, eventually. Yeah. When she's dead and famous.
Yeah. Do you have photographs of it?
I do, yeah. And those are the things that you get room to try out, and you just get to have every harebrained idea, and then you've got the space to actually try it out and see what happens. And we suspended it off of French cleat, so it hung loose, because stretching it would have been impossible. So it just hung like this kind of open sheet, and you could peer behind it, and it actually had movement itself, which added to it.
That's cool.
That was fun.
Wow. And it just sounds like arguing a thesis almost of, I don't even know what to call it, like an art thesis. Did you feel, what was your oral argument for the thing? Did you have to say anything to these people and defend it?
Yep.
Were they trying to chop it down from
the
roots, or what?
Because at that point I'd been working with them for 3 years, and so we'd had a long conversation, and I'd written an entire paper, and so if you haven't buttoned up your holes, they will be exposed during your defense. But if you've tightened it up, and if you've had a really good conversation going, then you're in better
shape.
Better shape for it. Yeah, and that you know kind of what the conversation's going to be about.
Yeah.
I've seen some pretty ugly defenses, though.
I can only imagine. So the two of you are in the same town, which is amazing. You're here to ruin Bozeman together. And your sister lives here as well.
She correct? Does.
Yeah.
And she does art as well. She's an artist.
Really? What is her medium? What does she do?
She does these great black and white pen and ink drawings. They're very inspired by New Yorker cartoons. They're really humorous and quirky and snide.
Yeah. Very subtle, but and there's a lot of irony. And snide is good. Yes, because it's got a little snide side.
A little snide side?
I like that. Very talented. Well, but she has a 15-month-old son as well. It's Michelle. And
you guys are busy.
And now he's kind of entered into the art, because she's got a new subject besides, her garden or whatever else. And her dogs. Snoop Dogg. So, yeah, that's fun.
I love it. Well, I've not met your sister, but I have now seen her nude.
You have?
I guess I have. I've never walked into a home where the very first thing I saw was a giant nude on the wall, and then someone immediately saying, "Well, that's my sister." Mm-hmm. That's a first for me, and it suggests to me like a very mature and smart way of thinking about the human body. Where does that come from in your family? Just you're a hippie? It can't be that easy.
Well, that's Michelle's Renaissance Revisited. That's Daphne, her sister is, right? Daphne.
Danae. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but
there you go. See, Danae. You have an art education. And Daphne is who I see up there. Yeah. No, it's a wonderful painting.
Juliet's posed for me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's one of the main people. And she rolls her eyes, but then she's like, all right.
Fine, I'll do this perfectly, whatever. Yeah, it's just great. I think it's so cool.
We have a family friend who came in. Her face is, for those of you who can't see it, very much turned away. You can see like just a little bit of her profile, and so it's hard to tell who it is. And a friend walked in and was like, "Is that you?" to my sister. And she's like, "Yes." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I recognize your thighs." She's like, "What?" Maybe not thighs, but legs, yeah.
Right. That's amazing. That's a sentence I don't know that I've ever heard. I recognize those thighs anywhere.
Maybe he was being coy, but who knows?
That's great. Wow.
Yeah.
But so where does that come from in you guys? Is that a family ethic? I mean, you said your mom would pose for you guys as a kid. Do you just not really worry about it? Don't think about nudity or the human body in that way?
I paint animals. So that's not a conflict. Iguanas when I was in Costa Rica, and now well, totally sandhill cranes, yeah. And yeah. So it was never an issue.
Yeah.
My wife wouldn't pose for me, I know that. I'd be drawing her sometimes sketchy. Stop that!
You have a lot of pictures of mom. They're but mostly they're not her nudes. Hair. Right.
She does have great hair.
She mm-hmm. does, yeah. Yeah. Important hair.
Important hair.
Yep.
All right, so you're both trying to make, not trying, you're both successfully making art here in Bozeman. And it seems like both of you want your art to leave Bozeman and to be exposed to as many people as who can possibly see it. I encourage that. I think it's great. If we had anything other than a... And that painting that you did is larger than our vehicle. Just to give you context.
We could just wrap it.
Yeah, well, perfect. Sold.
Well, the bane of most artists is that unless you're extremely successful, you have tons of your own art. Yeah.
Well, what are you guys doing to shift that burden of storage?
Besides a bonfire. My sister and her husband both teach art at a small college, or they're just retiring this year. And they always laugh that their house is held up by a basement full of art. And they're like, who's going to take all this? Our kids don't want it. When we die, the first thing they're going to do is have a bonfire.
Lucy will.
You know, and that is a consideration that everybody has too much art. So my idea and my next show with my Sandhill Cranes is I'm giving it away. Not totally, but I'm hoping people will buy the art. And I will donate it to whichever environmental organization, NGO that they like.
Yeah.
And that'll be good for me. I'll get rid of some art and maybe it'll raise my profile a little because maybe a business or somebody with enough money will buy it and I can put that down in my bio. But yeah, I just think it's time for me to give back. And I don't know how other than doing something like this because I'm not going to go join, you know, an organization, you know, and... you know, become the creative director of environmental group or whatever. And what I love right. to do is paint. And so I'd like to see that go towards, you know, Mother Earth.
Yeah.
It's in peril.
Well, we got the opportunity to see your studio today and you can tell it is a place where someone has a good time. And
that's true.
I don't use, specifically I'm not using the word fun because very often you can be highly pissed off and still be having a good time or very frustrated. And I know that that act of creation isn't just like, it's not just fun because that's not, doesn't quite cover it.
But well, getting into the zone, I mean, most artists, that's where they go when they do mm-hmm. art. They get into a zone where they got music on or whatever. And that's, it's very, very satisfying. You know, it's a drug. Yeah. And I'm sure your serotonin levels peg, you know, but the bottom line is afterwards you go, oh, I was just away from my family, you know, for 4 hours and I spent a lot of money on art supplies and renting the studio mm-hmm. space and how do I rationalize this? Well, I'm retired now. So, you know, thank God that burden's off my back. But I'm still gonna make art.
Yeah.
And I would just like it to go, you know, to somebody who appreciates it to a good cause.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at.
I'm less altruistic.
You're young.
I need money.
You need money, baby.
Diapers are not free.
No, they're not paying for themselves.
I'll squeeze some art out of her.
Yeah.
No, I'm painting and applying to shows and galleries and doing the whole try to balance the creation of art with the art business side, which yeah. is a big area of growth because, you know, it's so much fun to just go tinker and I want to work on perfecting hair. Oh, I've got to work on my art resume or my bio and sending out material. But I feel like social media has opened doors like none other and it's really changing the playing field.
Sure.
Listening to podcasts and Instagram is, you know, neurotic of a bunny hole as it is, it's still a useful one.
It can be. It certainly can be.
Mm-hmm. And a very visual place to start to, you know, find. I'm finding a little bit more of my particular art culture, which is nice because being in Bozeman, we're, you know, 8 hours drive from Denver, you know, the next biggest city. So right. It's good to have that connection and to feel like you're a part of a bigger world than yourself and not just working in isolation.
It seems like with your art and kind of what you're doing with your altruistic turn of art, donorship? How would you even put that?
Donorship.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's a...
take it, please. Yes,
well, but I guess what I'm getting at is it seems like with the incredible height of skill that your art has reached and the difficulties in finding market for that sort of thing, even though it's at peak, I would argue that in my master's thesis of appreciation of your work, it's at a peak. I mean, it's incredible. And there's a lot of stuff out there and you're having to compete with all these things. It almost seems like combining experience, like tailoring or crafting some sort of experience for people that could somehow live with that art, maybe take people to these storms, you know, make some sort of experience out of them, combine the things that you guys have been a part of. You'll most likely end up explaining your life or why you like to paint your sister nude, but at least you can have people out there with you on some sort of
experience. She's married now, that's ending.
But do you follow where I'm going with that? Like that your art in these days of, you know, trying to hope that social media will bring in a following that will actually buy stuff from you, or getting so desperate that you're willing to give the money that you receive away to someone else. It seems
for a
like
good cause.
For a very good cause, but that there is something else out there, some other creative way to sort of pimp your creative wares. Is that something you guys have thought about, like collaboration type of thing, or every man for himself at this point?
Oh, of us collaborating? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe down the line, I would defer to Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes, because you know, I mean, she's an up-and-coming artist. I'm an old guy who's doing what he loves, and I wouldn't ever want to put the onus on her. Like, let's do a father-daughter show, because that's so cute. You know, so it may happen. Who knows? You know, we appreciate what each other does.
Yeah, I can tell. Mm-hmm. You can tell. There's her art in your home.
Yeah, but I don't want to ride on her art. And
oh, dude, you got it.
She doesn't want to ride on my eccentricities.
That's great.
Who knows? Yeah.
But it's good because when I'm like feeling, you know, unmotivated or down, you're like, you got to do this. You got to apply for this. And, you know, you feed off of each other's energy. And it's like if one of you's in a funk, the other one's like, hey, like you stopped using. You were going to stop painting because it was giving you such bad headaches. And
yeah, I was and Michelle said, you know, Dad, there's all these organic you know, paints and mediums and things like that. And so I was going to switch back to acrylics, which I really don't like that much because they dry way too fast, and I don't know, acrylics are great if you enjoy them, but you know, Michelle turned me on to, you know, walnut oils and all these different things, and brush cleaners that are all basically organic,
low VOC type of thing.
Yeah, because otherwise you're painting with a mask on, and you know, it's just not the way. It doesn't have that kind of freedom.
Sure.
Of just, you know, and plus I'm into the dip, dab, and dribble thing. You know, with you know, put on latex gloves, but then, you know, I'll be out there, you know, using my fingers. I mean, I practically finger paint to a certain degree. I'll have to do a time lapse and let people see my process.
That's what I'm talking about. Creating an experience for people that somehow intermingles with your art, you know, that when I was asking, do you maintain and retain these collages? My sister told me about going to see, what was the guy who made Edward Scissorhands? What was the director?
Yeah, Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. She went to see an exhibit of his art in Paris. And it was, you know, he's known for making movies.
Yeah.
But he's a very prolific artist and draws and makes these sketches. And even that was cool for people because you get to dial into his process and see how he builds these worlds. So I feel like what you make is amazing, but even kind of enhancing it with the bits of the process, because it's hard for someone like myself who I can draw flies. So
that, not stink people?
Yeah. No, I meant I just stink.
Oh.
But to see, to imagine how that process comes together.
Michelle does some good time-lapse photography of her work, which is really exciting. And I'd like to try to do that too, because I think that gives an insight into where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And how much it takes, you know, to build up to what you, you know, end up with. And I don't know about Michelle, but, you know, I'm so involved with the process. And when I finally sign my name and wait for it to dry to, you know, put a varnish on it, I don't own it. I just, it doesn't mean as much to me anymore. Yeah. And I don't care if it moves on to somebody else, you know, which is one of the reasons why I don't have a problem with giving some stuff away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like when I finish something, I like to live with it for... I'd love to live with it for a month and then it can go. Like the process of painting it was mine.
Yes.
And it was an interesting thing because I feel like in my early 20s, up to that point, I wanted to keep everything I did. And then I kind of just had this sit down with myself and was like, I get to keep them as long as I sell them. And, you know, like I get to keep doing them and they're still mine and I get to go through them and watch the trajectory of growth and how it's changed. And, letting them go and sending them out into the world is a real privilege. You know, hopefully you get to do that.
Yeah. I know, Steve, that you've carved and done woodworking as well. Do you have any other mediums or things that you like to work with? Do you use sculpture? Or?
Oh, I loved metalsmithing, but having a metalsmithing studio is not going to happen. And I found ceramics to be incredibly cathartic because I paint so tight that to just play with clay, because I wasn't really good at it, was wonderful, but I haven't had access to those. Yeah. And I'd love to try chipping away at marble just because the David's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that will happen anytime soon.
Never know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you like to make? Did you make your boat?
No, door? I didn't. Okay. I'm not... left-brained enough to do that kind of stuff.
You have a really cool wooden boat, though. That is a nice boat.
I do have a beautiful old classic-style dory, yeah. Uh-huh. But, no, I mean, I've always dreamed. I'd love to go to Italy and just, take a class in sculpture and in marble, but I don't see that happening, actually.
Why Italy? That's the peak?
That's the peak.
It's done its best?
Yeah.
You're not kidding around. If you're going to go learn it, you're going to learn from the best.
Why not? But, you know, it's so time-consuming. I mean, when you actually go to Italy and you look at all the Renaissance art and whatever, whether it's painting or sculpture, you're just like, holy cow. They could have just stopped and said, that's it for art.
We've done it.
You can't do this good, then just give it up, dudes. Because this is the pinnacle, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's why when you look at a lot of modern art and you look at what people are doing, you're like, really? Renaissance painters and artists would just die if they saw what was making millions and millions of dollars. I mean, they would just fall over dead.
Like, why did I work so hard?
I don't know. I think Michelangelo would be like, eh.
Yeah, he'd give me another glass of wine.
So let me ask you about that. Where do you think the future is heading for all this? Is it pendulous? Is it coming back to fine art and then goes to crap and then back and forth? Or do you feel like it's on an arc or a trajectory? What do you see for the future of art?
Don't you think technology is changing things so much? Photography changed things hugely. That was a huge shift, you know, something that didn't exist before. And then now I think technology, what you can do digitally is going to be the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it won't have the value of the handmade because it can be so multiplied. Just the way, if you know, even though art photographs are fantastic, they still don't have the value, like the resale value, sure, kind of piece for piece as a painting or a sculpture, you know, because
it'll be like classical quality. Music. Classical music will always be appreciated, and the people that are really good at it, I think that's the, would be the parallel. And maybe there'll never be another Mozart or Beethoven, or but there'll be people that will keep that tradition alive.
Yeah.
And it'll always be valued.
I like your thought about that, the one-offness of it, the sort of, it's one of these and everything else is a copy of that thing, is kind of special. Whereas on the internet, you're almost making a copy. Even the original is sort of a copy. It's meant to be reproduced indefinitely. Thank you for tuning into the Monkey Tooth podcast, this copy of many other podcasts. But, you know, it really is just immediately sort of almost disposable in a way. Whereas, you know, what you are doing, I mean, although it's very storable, it's not disposable. Even though you talked about twice burning all this wonderful art.
I think he just doesn't want to burden us with all of it.
No, but my, you know, my daughters have blessed me with asking me for art, yeah, you know, and that's always nice to come in their house and go, oh, there's my stuff.
So you're both hopeful in your own way about the future of art.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I teach up at MSU, and the enthusiasm and the, like, the just genuine authenticity of the kids up there is great. It's, I saw somewhere recently that they were like, if you want to put art down and say, oh, you know, you should get a degree in something that'll make you money or something more practical, then you should be forbidden from listening to music, watching anything, seeing, like, no Netflix, right, no, yeah, art, not a picture, right, for a month. And there you see go. What happens. Because it is our food, and we are lucky enough to get to indulge in it.
Yeah. Well, the infusion of art into everything else. I mean, if you think about the people who have an art background that do all the other things that you enjoy in life that don't necessarily make sculpture or painting, but they have found a way to run a business, or they run a restaurant, or they do any number of other things that enrich our lives kind of constantly. I mean, think of all the art, sort of art grads that work at Apple, or that work, mm-hmm, in any of these tech companies that provide that creative and special twist that you wouldn't otherwise get. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're trying to talk people out of getting an arts degree or tell people that drugs are bad, yeah, you should have to lay off of music, of food, of all these things.
Yep.
None for you. You're on break.
Including no salt.
Yeah, no salt. Yeah, exactly. No coffee, no sugar.
No smiling.
No smiling. Nope.
Yeah.
Well, I know we've got a young kid around here who's very desperate to see his mom.
he might be.
Man, I'm so happy to have.
If anybody is as interested in you as I am, how could they find you? Either email or social media?
I've got a website, which is michelleosmond.com. And then on Instagram, it's Michelle Osmond Art. And Facebook, there's a Facebook page, but that's linked to the Instagram page.
Right. Yeah. OSMAN, right?
Yes. Yeah. OSMAN.
Great.
Very cool.
And I have a website as well, Steve Osmond Fine Art. I have an Instagram page, I think. Probably just Steve Osmond. Yeah. I'm trying to get, you know, get more tech.
That's cool.
Here in my old age. And I would like anybody else who's an artist and who would be interested in giving me input into what they think about art for the environment, if people want to give me ideas or help out in that way, I would love to expand it from what I'm doing in Bozeman. I think there's an incredible amount of art out there that people would love to see,
yeah,
get in somebody's hands who appreciates it and have that go to a good cause.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to make money at it because it's certainly not making them any money in their garage or in their basement, right, or wherever. So that's
a beautiful
my plea.
Idea.
Yeah.
And then you could contact me through my website.
Okay. And we'll definitely put up links to both of your websites and any social media, anything you want to put up, we'll put it up there. And we've taken quite a bit of pictures. Thank you for letting us do that.
Of course.
That we'll put up on the website with your permission. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
And tomorrow, the Yellowstone River.
Woo!
she said, now that it's time that I got out of bed. When I walked myself down Sycamore Street, the sun beats down, no shoes on my feet, and I stumble on a daisy through concrete. Pink and brown babies in pink stroller cars know that it's good, they don't care where they are. Down Sycamore Street, the sun beats down, no shoes on my feet, and I stumble on a daisy through concrete.
Hi, Tiffany here, saying thank you for listening to the Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you haven't already, or it's been a while, check out our website, mtp.dog. There's plenty of information there. An about tab with a little bio on Andrew, myself, and our dog Pele. There's also a van build tab detailing how we did our van conversion. A journal tab, and we, as in Andrew, are doing our best to keep that up to date. And last but not least, a contact tab where you can leave your thoughts, suggestions, or questions. You can also contact us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram, Monkey Tooth Podcast. If you would like to donate and or subscribe to the cause, you can go to Patreon and GoFundMe at Monkey Tooth Podcast. Patreon is not just a place to subscribe. We post lots of content there as well. We greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Love to all.